Every community has a place where people meet and stories are told. The East Coast has stoops, the South has porches, and in Alaska, we have Arctic entries.
Here, Alaskans share their personal stories, funny, sad, and sweet. These stories are originally told at our monthly events in Anchorage. At each live performance, seven people tell a seven-minute-long, true story related to the show's theme.
I'm Jason Brandeis.
And I'm Rosie Robarts.
Welcome to the Arctic Entries Radio Hour on KSKA, Anchorage. This hour of Arctic Entries Radio will feature stories based on the theme, Those Were the Days.
We'll hear about growing up in rural Alaska, as well as some random, embarrassing, and even extraterrestrial moments from youth.
It's coming directly toward us. We hop back in the front seat and start the car engine because we want to get closer to it.
All of these stories were originally told in December 2012 at the Snow Goose Theater in Anchorage as part of our live monthly event.
We'll begin with a story from Emily Kern. Fair warning, Emily is about to really embarrass herself.
Or at the very least, the teenage version of herself.
So I was 15, and I had never kissed a boy, or held a boy's hand, or developed anything on my body that resembled a woman in any way. And I had a crush on a boy named Jared Emerson, who I was in a musical with. And one afternoon, we were at a friend's house watching the movie Speed with Keanu Reeves, where he's dismantling the bomb on the bus. And Jared and I were sitting next to each other, and we had a blanket over our laps, and our hands were under the blankets, and he reached out and he took my hand. And my heart started pounding, and I got really excited, but I was like pretending to be totally into the movie. And I started noticing like all these like new feelings in my body, and specifically this feeling I had never felt before, which was a sensation that made me just feel like I thought I just had to pee. So I sat with it for a couple minutes, and then I was like, maybe I just have to pee. So I got up and I went to the bathroom, and it turned out I didn't have to pee. So I went back to the couch and Jared Emerson took my hand again. And we watched the movie for a little while longer, and then I got the same feeling again. I was like holding his hand makes me feel like I have to pee. So I was like feeling really self-conscious about getting up again because I had just gotten up to pee, and I like didn't want to I didn't want him to think like something was wrong with me. So I waited like a few more minutes, and then I was like, okay, like this is a reasonable amount of time. Like I'm gonna get up and go pee now. So I went a different route to the bathroom, which went through the kitchen, hoping that everyone thought I was just getting a snack. And I went through the kitchen and went into the bathroom and closed the door really quietly. And again, turns out I didn't have to pee. So now I'm feeling really nervous about going back and sitting back down because I'm worried that I'm going to have that feeling again and I'm going to have to get up again. So when I go back and sit down, I tell him that I promised my mom I would call her, but her phone's busy. So I'm going to have to keep getting up until the phone's not busy anymore. And that gave me permission to get up as many times as I needed over the course of the movie. And I missed half of the movie, Speed. And Jared Emerson and I never kissed, but Keanu Reeves saved everybody on the bus, so that's good. So I was still 15 when I had a crush on a boy named Brandon McCarthy, who I was in a musical with. And nothing happened during that musical, but after that musical, Brandon was in his high school's musical, and he called me one afternoon and invited me to come see him in the musical. And then he invited me to come with him to the cast party afterwards, which meant one thing, that Brandon McCarthy wanted to make out with me. So I was really cool, and I said, like, yeah, like, that sounds fun, but I was really excited. And the next week, my mom and I went to go see Brandon McCarthy in his musical. When he came out on stage, my heart started racing, and I got really excited, and I was, like, watching him really closely, and I was watching, like, his hands, thinking, like, those are the hands that, like, are going to be, like, on this outfit. I was, like, looking at my outfit, and I was, like, looking at his face, and I was, like, oh, my God, like, those lips are going to be, like, you know, next to mine, and I was just, like, studying him and, like, starting to get more nervous, and I started noticing that, like, his dancing wasn't very good, and then, like, his singing was, like, kind of off pitch, and I started, like, getting panicking a little bit, and I was, like, oh, my God, like, I have to make out with this guy later. And I started feeling, like, obligated. Then I was like, well, I have to make out with him because I told him I would make out with him. I told him I'd go to the cast party, which basically is saying, like, I'm going to make out with you. So I have to go, and I have to make out with him. And I just started panicking, and then I started feeling really paranoid that everybody in the audience, like, knew, like, I was the girl that was going to be making out with Brandon McCarthy later. And, like, I was associated with him, and I started, like, shaking. And I felt like everybody was, like, watching him, thinking, like, oh, my God, I can't believe Emily Curran is making out with him later. Like, he doesn't even sing very good. And I just started panicking, and, like, my whole body was shaking. And by intermission, I was so nauseous that I asked my mom to take me home, and I threw up for 2 hours. And I missed a cast party. I missed probably a totally awesome cast party, and I never saw Brandon again. So when I was 16, I'd still never kissed a boy. And I was a counselor at Jewish summer camp, which is almost as cool as a musical. And camp was going to be over in 2 days. And one night after dinner, a group of counselors in training came up to me and told me that their friend Micah thought I was cute. And I had never noticed Micah, but the only thing I knew about him that is that he had this, like, vaguely Russian accent. And he wasn't not cute. And I'd still never kissed a boy. So I was like, yeah, like, I think he's cute, too. So they went and reported back to Micah that I thought Micah was cute, and then Micah came up to me and asked if I wanted to go stargazing with him on the volleyball courts later. And I was like, yeah, that sounds cool. It's totally nonchalant. So we put the campers to bed, met at the volleyball courts about 9:30, and lied down. And I was really nervous, as you can imagine. And so I was like, trying to make conversation about the stars and just stalling and stalling because I knew, like, any minute he was going to lean over and kiss me, and I was, like, really nervous about it. And then he did, and we started kissing, and I was, like, not enjoying it at all because I was, like, narrating everything that was happening. I just kept thinking, like, I'm making out with a boy, I'm making out with a boy, oh, my God, I'm making out with a boy, and, like, where do I put my hands, and what do I do? And I was just, like, and then the longer we made out, the more nervous I got, and I started shaking. And it was, like, a warm summer night in Northern California, but I was really self-conscious about the fact that I was shaking, so I told him I was cold. So then he, like, pulled me closer, and then I started getting more nervous. And eventually, like, I was just, like, sweating and shaking, and I, like, couldn't take it anymore. So I told him I had to go back to my cabin because I had to get up early the next morning, which I didn't. So I got back to the cabin. I lied down in my bunk bed and was trying to, like, calm down. But, like, my heart was pounding, and I was just, like, my brain was just, like, worrying, and I was, like, shaky. And my stomach started hurting more and more and more. And I got up, and I went to the bathroom, and I threw up for 8 hours. So there was only 2 more days left in camp, and I managed to avoid Micah. Never saw Micah again. So the first time that I held hands with a boy, I missed half the movie Speed because I was in the bathroom. And then the first time that I almost made out with a boy, I missed probably a totally awesome cast party because I was, like, in the bathroom throwing up. And then the first time that I did make out with a boy, I threw up for 8 hours. And I finally got to make out with a boy, but I put in a lot of time in the bathroom.
That was Emily Curran, and you're listening to Arctic Entries on KSKA Anchorage. Emily is also a singer-songwriter here in Anchorage. Her music is at emilykernmusic.com.
During this hour, we hear Alaskans tell stories about nostalgia, puberty, and the mysteries of childhood. Our theme is, Those Were the Days.
Each storyteller has 7 minutes to share his or her story. You may have noticed the timer during that last story. At 5 minutes, the hosts of the live Arctic Entries show let the storytellers know it's time to tie things up. And then another timer sounds at 7 minutes to let the storytellers know it's time to make way for the next speaker.
Our next story is from Angela Gonzalez, who grew up in rural Alaska.
Hi, everyone. So happy to be here. So I'm from Huslia, which is in the northern interior of Alaska, way up northwest of Fairbanks. And I grew up in fish camp from the time school got out to the time it started again. So we were at camp all summer. camp was 16 miles below Huslia, and maybe about an hour to get there. We had a slower motor back then. This was in the maybe 80s, and there was a whole bunch of us who went to camp, fish camp. So the reason we went to camp is so we could have fish for the winter for eating. So we stored it in the winter. We smoked the fish, but we also cut fish for the dogs. My dad was a dog musher in the interior. So the days were long. There are some days when we got about 100 fish, and there was my parents, my cousins, my sisters and brothers. There were six of us, so they had a lot of help. And so we worked early in the morning. I was a little bit younger, so I wasn't cutting fish yet. And so we did all the chores, my cousins my age and my sisters. And we would have to bring the fish up the bank and then hang it. And then we also had to keep fire under the smoke, the fish racks. And we also had to get wood to keep that fire going. We had a lot of chores. It was a lot of work. I remember thinking back then how I felt like, you know, my friends and cousins in Huslia were having so much fun while I was slaving away at camp. But in the midst of all this work, like we had to cut grass, you know, get wood constantly, keep the mosquitoes away. And then there's also cooking. My grandma was like the camp cook, and she would cook sourdough pancakes in the morning, and we also ate a lot of fish. But whenever she started to cook sourdough pancakes, she would say, "Who wants sukani?" And sukani is sourdough pancakes or bread in Koyukon Athabascan. So everyone would say, "Me, me, me." So we'd all compete. So we had a lot of fun in these little competitions. If there was an airplane flying over, we would say, "First one here, airplane." And then also, if there was a boat, you know, "First one to hear, boat." And then after we heard the boat, whoever won, we'd all run over to the cut bank. It was a really high cut bank. And then we would say, "First one to see, boat." And then whenever it came around the bend. And then after that, we would say, "I think that's Tony and Emily," you know. So we'd try to guess who was in the boat. So we kept ourselves entertained. I remember when we had... for games, we played all sorts of games outside. We played card games, dice. My parents played cribbage in the late evening after they cut fish all day. But one of the things my sisters and cousins did, we made elaborate Barbie mansions along the bank. So mine was always the best. We loved Barbies back then. We didn't really, of course, there's no electricity in the camp. We had a battery-operated radio, and that's how we would hear the news, music on the radio. And if someone wanted to reach us, they could also drive down to the camp and let us know when visitors would come by. They would give us the latest news, maybe bring some comic books or magazines or anything, you know, food. Like candy, and so by the end of the summer, all those magazines were all worn out, you know, from reading it multiple times, and especially the comic books, Archie. And so if there was an emergency and no one was coming down, they would pass a message on the KIYU out of Galena on the radio station, say, you know, "There's an emergency, you need to come to town," or whatever, or just pass on the message. We also listened to radio, and we were working really hard, so we kept ourselves entertained with the music. So one of the songs in the early 80s was Abracadabra. "Abra, abracadabra, I want to reach out and grab you." So we all sang along in camp. All my cousins, there was just a large extended family. So we really just had fun in any ways. I remember my mom would have she'd made mosquito nets, and the mosquitoes and gnats are really bad in the interior, and it's just hot. But I remember reading under the mosquito nets, and it's homemade, so it's like white, shimmery mosquito netting, and then really cool fabric, and I just remember how comfortable it was. Those are some of my best memories. So it was just a lot of fun. It was a lot of hard work. I don't feel like I really missed out after all, looking back. And I hope that I try to go back once a year. Like, I live in Anchorage, but it's just difficult to get up there. So I go at least once a year with my two girls and my husband and try to bring them to camp. And my daughter, sometimes the older one, I'll send her there so she could hopefully learn how to, number one, work hard, because teenagers need to work hard. And also to live off the land, you know, that's really important. And then also to have fun. I mean, I think that's the important lessons in life that my parents and my grandparents taught us. So that's it. Anabase. Thank you.
That was Angela Gonzalez live at the Snow Goose Theater in December 2012. You're listening to Arctic Entries Radio on KSKA Anchorage. I'm Jason Brandeis.
And I'm Rosie Robards. Our theme for this show is Those Were the Days. As you may know, anyone may volunteer to tell a story at Arctic Entries. For more on that, arcticentries.com.
At each live event, we also feature songs from local artists. We'll break now from stories to play some music from Jackie Schaefer and Tovey Newman. This was also recorded live at Arctic Entries in December 2012. Thank you.
You can say that you're leading me on, but it's just what I want you to do. Don't you notice how hopelessly I'm lost? That's why I'm following you. Never again. Oh, I know that
listening to Arctic Entries on KSKA Anchorage. Thank you, Jackie Schaefer and Tovey Newman, for the music. Now we'll hear more true stories from Alaskans.
Next up is someone well-known in the Anchorage community. Scott Anaya is one of the owners of Crush, a wine bistro and cellar. But this particular story takes place way before he ever thought he'd be living in Anchorage, let alone owning a local business.
I grew up in suburbia Cleveland. And as anybody did in high school, we, you know, found secluded places to, you know, drive the car and go park. Mine happened to be at the edge of civilization where suburbia turned into country. And it was a country road I knew really well. It was about 10, 12 miles long, and I could drive up to 100 miles an hour on it just because we knew every curve. And my high school girlfriend and I would often head out on that road to our destination, which I didn't think was too odd till I told this story for the first time some years later, but it was a cemetery. Very secluded. Perfect for high school. So getting there was in the 78 Grand Prix, two-tone lime green Grand Prix. Awesome car, great car to drag race in. It looked like mom's car, which it was, but it was fast. So anyway, we reached the destination, the cemetery, and there was a little bit more room in the back seat, so it was kind of our customary procedure to hop back there and make ourselves comfortable and do what high school kids in love do. Public radio will keep it PG-13-ish. Well, so we're doing what high school kids do in the back seat of that Grand Prix. It was very comfortable, very fun, very exciting. My heart raced. I didn't barf. But I was very distracted one night, really distracted. There was a really bright light way off in the distance, and it was odd. It was an odd bright light. Sort of where airplanes normally flew from kind of left to right heading to Cleveland Hopkins Airport, way off in the distance. But this light didn't really move that way. It sort of stayed the same, but would get brighter. And even though I was in the moment and having a lot of fun, I couldn't help but stare through my high school girlfriend's strawberry red blonde hair. And trail off mid-kiss because this light was getting brighter and brighter and brighter. And then it started moving really weird. And clearly my high school girlfriend thought something was wrong with her and kept asking questions. Finally, the light is moving so odd off in the distance, and it's kind of coming toward us in spurts and left to right motion. And so we're watching this light. Clearly it's not anything normal. I did confirm this story maybe 10, 12 years ago with my high school girlfriend, and I was telling it right for the previous 10 or 12 years. Don't add it up so you know how old I am. But the modern marvels of Facebook, I once again confirmed this story a couple of days ago, and she gave me permission to tell it, as long as it was on Alaska Public Radio, not NPR. lest her parents in Michigan would hear this story and keel over. But the light is coming all of a sudden very fast toward us, and it's getting bigger, and it's just a big, bright light that isn't protruding light, but it's just shining and shimmering. But it's really bright. But it's not, you know, shooting a beam or anything. It's coming directly toward us. We hop back in the front seat and start the car engine because we want to get closer to it. And we pull out of the cemetery to the country road that we know really well, and it starts moving parallel to the country road. So we get out on the road and are moving, and it's speeding up, and we're going 60, 80 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden it would slow down. And then we'd be going 20 or 30 miles parallel, kind of, we're going to meet sometime, in, you know, a few miles down the road. Really odd. I mean, we're pinching ourselves. We're just kind of freaked out. 100 miles an hour, 60 miles an hour, 20 miles an hour, all of a sudden, dead stop, the thing stops off to the left-hand side, and we screech on the brakes, come to a screeching halt. It lifts up, and boom, it's gone. Like just in a flash, in an instant. We kind of take off in that general direction because we want to find this thing. I mean, it was pretty cool. We end up all the way out at the Great Northern Mall, right back in civilization, right back in suburbia, and we realize we've clearly gone too far. We're not going to find it in the middle of all this city mess. But we also realize that we're naked. So we pulled to the very end of the parking lot, out of the bright parking lot lights, and got dressed. And then sped back. We wanted to go see it again. So we figured, well, let's go back to the location and let's hit our road and let's go check it out. We get back, and it is there again, sort of in the same exact distance away that we had originally saw it. And we're not quite to our special spot, the cemetery. So we turned around, and again, we're going parallel. 60, 80 miles an hour, 40, 20, like literally going, it was so odd, like playing cat and mouse. And then it stopped. So we, again, hit the brakes pretty hard, backed up a little bit, pulled down this driveway, and it's this old barn, maybe 40, 50 yards. And the UFO is maybe 40, 50 yards off the ground, right behind the barn. And it's a big cowboy-shaped hat with four huge bright disc lights on it. And we're pinching each other. Do we get on it? Would you get on it? No, are we getting? And we were getting on it. We were getting on it. Well, maybe she was. I'm not quite sure if I was. And just like that, lifted up a little bit more, flash, gone.
You just heard a live recording from our December 2012 Arctic Entries event. That was Scott and Aya.
Each month, the Arctic Entries Storyboard works with seven Alaskans to share their stories. To listen to these stories and more, visit arcticentries.com.
Next, we'll hear from Natasha Price. Natasha grew up in Anchorage, where she went to Service High School and kept detailed notes about her daily life.
When I was about 13 years old, I started keeping a journal, which I, to this day, still keep. But when I first started it, I thought it would be all inspirational and poetic, but it's pretty boring. It's my day-to-day life, you know, what I bought at the mall, what I got on my math test. But there is this one chunk of time that, to me, sums up puberty so well. And it's about my first boyfriend. And I mean my real first boyfriend. Like, we went out for over a month. And since I was born and raised here, I am going to change the names in here for protection. So we're going to call the boy Jimmy Monroe. Hope you enjoy. February, Friday the 13th, 1998. What a day. Well, in French, Jesse Miller and Sarah Jones passed out Valentine's roses, and they didn't give me one. I was sad, but at the end of the period, Sarah gave me a rose that was from Mark. Next hour, Jimmy Monroe gave me the greatest, most unbelievable gifts. First, he gave me a big box of chocolates. Original. Then, he gave me this Crystal Star of David necklace. I couldn't believe that he would give me something so great. I felt so good, so wanted, so special. March 5th, Thursday. I had a good day. I was one of the five people who got an A on her speech. Lisa keeps nagging me to go talk to Jimmy Monroe, and it was getting on my nerves. Finally, she told me that he likes me and wanted to find out if I liked him. Would it be weird to date a senior? Should I go out with him? He'd be so good to me. I mean, he already is. I would like to. I think I will. Oh, I don't know. Vanessa says he thinks no girls like him, and if he had a girlfriend, he'd treat her like she were the moon. March 24th. Boy, I had a bad day. I was coughing and sneezing all day. I sneezed 21 times. At lunch, I was sitting next to Jimmy, and Leah sits in his lap. I felt kind of weird sitting next to them, so I left. He apologized after school for doing that. He said that he and Leah are good friends, and she's aware that he likes me a lot. He said that. And then he asked me to prom! I naturally accepted. Isn't that exciting? Journal? March 27th. Now, this is just kind of a random thing, but I had to keep it in here. A funny thing happened to me today. I was sort of leaving gym early, and I was in the main square, and these black guys called me over. They asked me how old I was, and that one of them wanted to get it on with me. They asked me, one walked away, and the other guy said, "They all think you're gorgeous." Another guy said, "Are you afraid of the dark?" Well, my party went really well. Jimmy was late, and Joey couldn't come. It was really fun. Josh gave me a movable statue, Lisa a can of soup, Jimmy a set of 16 candles and Breakfast Club, Jenny a Go Fish game, a potato head keychain, and Flintstones tattoos. Anne gave me a prom necklace, some cool socks, and candy. When people left, Jimmy and Jenny and I watched 16 candles. Jimmy and I held hands. April 2nd. Ha! April Fools! It's April 1st. Jimmy and I are going to Midsummer Night's Dream on Friday. I went to Fran's after school to study for our stupid history test tomorrow. We went to Cars and I saw Brittany and I told her that I'm going to prom. Ha ha ha. Well, when I got home, I called Jimmy at KRUA and then I wrote him a note. He talked about me on the radio and said I was his woman. Sam and Miles are on the show and they both said I was awesome and some girl said he's lucky to have me. It was all very sweet. I felt so special. Oh yeah, I got that fern perfume. I like it. Okay, now it's April 2nd. I was so ready for the weekend today. The history test was fine. Jimmy and I are getting closer and closer, and I love it. We spent lunch in Fink's classroom together. We haven't kissed yet, which is all right by me, because I don't know how. After school, I spent a long time calling video stores to see if they had the commitments. No one did. I called a place called Video Mart, but they only sold XXX movies. It was sort of embarrassing. I tried calling Jimmy on the phone, and he said he'd call me back, but he hasn't. Oh, well. I'm not going to become a phone watcher. He just called. April 3rd. It's 12:30, and I just got back from my date with Jimmy. I had a great time. First, we went to Village Inn, and I had a salad. Then, we went to see A Midsummer Night's Dream. After the show, which was very good, we went to Hilltop parking lot, talked, and kissed. On his fabulous leather seat car, we made out. I still can't believe it. He said that the guys check me out in the halls a lot. He likes my new perfume. There you go, folks, my first kiss. He walked me to the door and kissed me goodbye. Oh my God! He called me a beautiful woman. I have killer eyes, a cute face. I could go on, but it's getting mushy. Everything is happening so fast. Can I sleep tonight? I'm so Twitter-pated. Note to self, I totally lied to myself. I wanted this to be really romantic, and so I lied so that my future self wouldn't be humiliated and ashamed of what I actually did. This kiss was terrible. April 13th. Jimmy was ignoring me today. He just gave me a pat on the head. I still don't know about him and Leah. They always have their arms around each other. He was around her more than me today. He has really nice eyes. Mom started adjusting my prom dress. It's coming right up. April 14th. Well, I only saw Jimmy for 3 minutes today. He wasn't around at lunch, and I didn't see him passing in the halls. I figured he went home, but Ashley said she saw him before fifth hour. Oh, well. Monday, April 20th. This was the worst day of my life. I felt so gross because I have my period. Jimmy's been avoiding me because he feels uncomfortable around me, and I bled through my pants and didn't realize it till I got home. I finished knitting my hat, but it's too small. I hate writing essays. I've been tired all day, depressed all day, and I've gone through 3 pairs of underwear. Mondays! April 21st. Well, Jimmy and I broke up, and we're not going to prom. I'm really not that sad, because I didn't like him from the beginning. I learned to like him. I talked to Robbie about the breakup, and he told me about his breakup. He said, "So, you're on the rebound? Well, so am I. So I think we should go on a date so we can tell everyone we went out, so that they will go out with us. See, that's how it works." So, we might do something this weekend. Thank you.
That was Natasha Price on the Arctic Entries Radio Hour. On this episode, our theme is Those Were the Days, We are hearing Alaskans reminisce about days gone by.
Before we get back to stories, let's hear another song from Jackie Schaefer and Tovey Newman. Jackie is a transplant from New York City. She also has a band which features some of the best young jazz musicians in Anchorage. They're called Jackie Schaefer and the Standard Deviations.
Love by a bird lane, that's what I always hear when you sigh. Never in my word land could there be ways to reveal in a phrase how I feel. Have you ever heard two turtle doves, Bill and Coo, when they love? That's the kind of magic music that we make with our lips when we kiss. And there's a wee beyond willow, he really knows how to cry. That's how I cry in my pillow if you should tell me farewell and goodbye. Oh, lullaby of birdland, whisper low, kiss me sweet, then we'll go flying high in birdland, high in the sky up above, all because we're in love. Oh, ba do ba do ba do ba da da ba do do ba ba do ba do ba do ba do ba ba do da ba do ba do da 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 ba do ba do ba do do da do ba do da do ba do da do da 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 ba 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 do da da do ba do. Should tell me farewell and goodbye. Oh, lullaby of birdland, whisper low, kiss me sweet, when we'll go flying high in birdland, high in the sky up above. All because we're in love.
You're listening to Arctic Entries on KSKA Anchorage. Our theme for this show is Those Were the Days. Our last story for this show comes from Sarah Jane Kaufman. We've heard stories about childhood and high school, but Kaufman has something a little different for us.
Okay, so this is a Christmas about a medley of Christmases in jail. I spent 14 years in prison. I just got out in February. Thank you. So my first Christmas in prison, I was thinking, okay, I enjoy Christmas. It's my favorite holiday. I can't wait. It's something to look forward to in this horrible experience. So our treat was popcorn, and I hate popcorn with a passion. And I just figured, okay, this is part of the punishment. And to wash it down, I got Pepsi, and I hate soda. So another year of hell, but it was self-imposed. I did it to myself. I belong there. So another Christmas that I remember, I had joined a inmate council, and that inmate council was involved in so many different things. And what we did every year was we donated all of the proceeds and funds from our store that we had there to adopt a village, adopt a family, and we would buy them all kinds of gifts and things like that. Well, anyway, so from these proceeds too, we would have parties, and there was 350 of us locked in a gym. You cannot leave. And so someone came up with the bright idea of karaoke. Yes, with no Christmas songs, yay. Yeah, it was just rock songs, and everybody enjoys rock songs, right? So nothing is more festive than Linkin Park crawling in your skin. Being screamed at you, and you cannot leave the gym, you're secured in there. So there was four of them singing it horribly. Yes, it was awesome. I'll never forget that. Okay. Another thing that we did there is I joined a prison orchestra. And part of that, every year we had a Christmas concert for everyone, and we have these guest artists that would come in. And so that's a huge deal for us. It's a big, huge thing for the women that practice for this all year long. And so the ticket sales, which we generate, actually help pay for us to be able to continue to play the instruments, the instruction, everybody that comes in. It's huge. One day a year, we get to be Cinderellas. One day a year, we get to get out of our canary yellow and be beautiful. And I remember the first concert that we had. It was spectacular because there's a mindset in there. We know that we're bad. We know that we've hurt you, and we genuinely feel bad about that, and we do not expect anyone to show up and encourage us. And yet the first concert, which was awful, people showed up, and I cannot even tell you how empowering and amazing it was to see even just one person, much less 50 to 100 people out there, encouraging us to continue this art and this culture and this manifestation of goodness. And I couldn't quit. I had to keep doing it forever. And I'll get back to that. Another Christmas that I remember is going back to the inmate council in the store. I was sitting there, and mind you, there's 350 women who want their shampoo and their hair doodles right now. So I'm focused on them, and I'm doing my sales, and I'm at the cash register, and in comes the chaplain. And behind me is the closet that houses all of the ornaments and Christmas tree and everything for the institution, and everyone, every wing, because the institution has wings, and there's a faith wing in our institution. Well, he comes in, I don't think anything of it, he's the chaplain, he's the good guy. So he comes in, and he's looking around, and like, well, that's a little weird. So he goes in and he sneaks into the room and he motions for these girls to come in, and they take out all kinds of ornaments. And I'm like, bye, chaplain, have fun with the ornaments. Well, here comes the sergeant. Sarah, where are the ornaments? What ornaments? What are you talking about? Well, the ones that we had in there. You know, we had them all inventoried, and the faith wing is the only wing in the institution that has any decorations. Do you know anything about that? No, not at all. So the chaplain stole Christmas. And I certainly wasn't going to be the one to tell on him. That would be weird. I love you, God. Anyway, so going back to the concerts. I've been playing with this orchestra for 9 years, and we just had a concert, and our guest artist was number one Billboard classical music artist last year, Zuul Bailey. Huge, big deal. Amazing guy. He is just completely awesome. So I actually went back to jail. What was interesting about this is I got to leave. I had a visitor badge. And I went in there for a very special reason. I went in there because I love those women. They're good people. They made bad choices. I get it. I made some bad choices too. But everybody changes. And I just wanted to encourage them and show them that I didn't forget them and that I love them. So I went back in there and I played with them, and it was so awesome. And the most awesome thing was, for the first time, I got to leave with my family this time. And I got to go have dinner with them. And time is so different in there. It's not as relevant. Out here, everything moves so fast, and people don't appreciate things in the same manner. Everything is appreciated, but you grow to appreciate things in a different flavor when they're not so readily available to you. This will be the first year in 15 years that I will actually be able to go home and have my mom's cooking for Christmas. I don't give a crap about some presents. I just care that I can hug my mom whenever I want to. and I'm so excited about it. It's so much better than Zool Bailey. He's really cool and he's so handsome, but nothing beats Mom for Christmas. And I just have to say that there is a different flavor when you've denied yourself the ability to have Christmas and you've denied yourself all of these wonderful, beautiful things, and the appreciation just glows for you. And there are good people in there that have made really bad mistakes, but just know that they have beautiful, beautiful hearts. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Arctic Entries Radio Hour. That was Sarah Jane Kaufman, live from December 2012. To hear these stories again or to share them with friends, visit arcticentries.com or alaskapublic.org.
Here's Allison Cheek with a sample of some of the great content we have online.
And I followed them, and just like that, I'm in a high-speed car chase at 7:45 in the morning. And I know that all I have to do is look at the license plate. All I need is the license plate number. It's all over. But the problem is I don't have my glasses, so I can't really see anything. So I keep trying to get close enough to read it, but I keep thinking, is that a 2 or a Z? Is that a B or an 8? And before I could figure it out, they took a sharp turn into a neighborhood, and this neighborhood was known for really narrow streets and lovely craftsman-styled homes. And they were blowing through stop signs, and so I was pausing just long enough to see that I wasn't hitting a van full of kindergartners. So we raced through the neighborhood, and we came to a T, and they took a right, and I knew the only thing at the end of this neighborhood was this apartment complex that was huge. All the apartments looked the same, and it was a maze, but I followed them anyway. And they must have not known where they were going either, because they took the first left, and it was a dead end. So they drove right up to the grass, and I pulled right behind them. And then the doors flew open. This was the first time that I thought perhaps this was a miscalculation.
That was Allison Cheek. Listen to the rest of her story at arcticentries.com. We also have information on our site about upcoming shows and details on how you too could tell a story. There's a full list of themes for Season 5, which begins on September 17th at the Performing Arts Center in Anchorage. I'll go through them real quick. The themes are Lightning Strikes, Mysteries, Close Calls, Whatever Works, I Got This, Experiments, Getaways, Seriously, and Go Big or Go Home. You can sign yourself up to tell a story as far in advance as you like. Our shows run through May.
We'd like to thank our storyboard, the storytellers for this show, and our musical guests, Jackie Schaefer and Tovey Newman. Thanks also to our audio engineers from the Alaska Teen Media Institute, Eric Laufer and Ishmael Strever.
And thanks to Anchorage's own Super Saturated Sugar Strings for our theme music. All the proceeds from our shows are donated to a local social services nonprofit. Information about this is also at arcticentries.com.
This has been the Arctic Entries Radio Hour on KSKA Anchorage. I'm Jason Brandeis.
And I'm Rosie Robards. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to hearing your stories.
Where will we go? What will we be? I want to be yours, but I want to be free. What will we do when times get tough? Improve our life or play from the rough? I love the start of new things to come, and I love your lips. What a gift. Some we fuss and fight when things go wrong. Will we laugh and sing every day a new song?
We'll just have to see what will be, will be. We can swim or sink in our new beginning. Oh, I'll just let it be. No more inquiries. falling on me. No more reassuring. Things are looking up. You're the best of them all. Will I keep my word? Would I have resolved? Eat a little less pork and be nice to you all. Don't need to know what the future stores. Just need your touch. Who can ask for more? This year, will my face look the same? Will we fall in love, or just fall like the rain?
We'll just have to sing.